How's everything been going?
Pretty good.
It's your first time doing Fall Club, huh?
Last fall I did it.
You so did?
It was all right. It was fun. I mean, I don't know, man. Scholastic gets a bad rap, folk style, in my opinion. I like it.
You do?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe because it's a nice distraction.
From what?
From freestyling Greco.
Oh, see, I don't know. I don't know.
Like, this is my off season.
Yeah. You
know, it's fun to do something different.
Yeah, it's so weird. That you know that's not a shared opinion. No. Like,
as opposed to many other of my ideas and thoughts and.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The way I look at stuff.
That's a good point, too. How deep into the. Like, so, first of all, what's interesting to me is that the first time you watch the World Championships, that you watch it pretty critically, don't you?
Yeah, like I don't really enjoy watching it live because right. Then I can't, you know, like if you stop it and go back on the live streaming, you can scroll back and watch stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then other stuff's happening while you're watching the stuff you want to look at.
For sure, for sure.
I watch, whenever I have a chance, I'm going to watch it anyway.
Right.
But
you're not going to sit down.
Go to the YouTube channel on, you know, the UWW channel and just, you know, pick and choose matches to watch. Most of that I just pick and choose based on score, not necessarily who's wrestling,
mm-hmm.
points up. Then I'll put it on. Sometimes I miss some good stuff because sometimes in a tight match there's a lot of action with no points.
Right.
And then sometimes there's points, there's, you know, like, you know, push outs and shot clock and horse shit like that.
Yeah.
That, you know, isn't showing anything.
Yeah, no, yeah, no, I hear you. So you're like, see, that's where you and I differ. I mean, I'm sure that there's a million different ways where you and I differ. But the first time it's funny too, because it came up as during NCAA's 1 year, you know, ESPN's basically showing every round now, right? I think they're showing pretty much every round.
Just about everything, yeah.
Right, which is cool, you know. So one of my buddies owns a restaurant, so I went there and watched, I don't know, I think it was like, you know, pre-quarters or you know, like basically like a mean nothing round. Maybe it was like Wrestle Back 2 or something. I don't even know. Right. But he was going, you know, and I'm still fixated, of course. And he goes, you know, when you watch this, do you watch it as to enjoy it or do you watch it critically and, you know, as a coach? And I had to think about it because as I was watching it there, I was just watching it as like a fan of wrestling. And that's really kind of the way I approach the most of the wrestling that I watch, especially if, like you said, it's on a live stream that you can't. I mean, I guess you could on this past live stream, you could go back a little bit, but then you're right, you miss a lot, and then it starts catching up, and then, you know, where do I fast forward? Do I know, you know, that kind of shit. So the first time I watch it just kind of as a fan, like, ooh, look at that kind of stuff. And then the second time I kind of go through it with a fine tooth comb, so to speak. And that's where I do a lot of the note taking and the rewinding and the constant, wait, what was that? And sometimes, you know, I'm sure UWW wouldn't like me saying this, but sometimes I'll actually, you know, either take a screen grab of it so I can and run it through like iMovie or something like that, just so I can slow it down, man, you know? And I think, you know, doing that has really helped. Just being able to slow-mo things.
I'm pretty good at the pause play.
You play that game? You know what that reminds me of, dude? That reminds me of back when we were kids and you had to record something off the radio and you had to press the record and play button.
Exactly.
It is. There is definitely a skill set to it. So you've gotten through a little bit of the Greco, is that correct?
Yeah.
And how far, like, what weights did you watch so far? Did you see Muhammad Ali get disqualified?
No, I go to the playlist, and I just work my way from the bottom up, and I just pick random bouts.
I'm not, just so we're clear, there's no, like, spoiler alert here. I don't have to, like, jump on it. The results, all right?
See, to me, it's really of no consequence who wins the tournament and all that stuff. I mean, you know, like, I'll root for certain guys or something like that, but mostly I'm just looking forward to watching them wrestle, so.
Right.
A guy like Vlasov, you know, if he's not wrestling Bezic, I'm excited to see what he's going to do.
Right.
What else he's wrestling against, and, you know, like, the draw that he had was just, it was just crazy.
Dude, that whole bracket, 75 kilo is
75 Greco is, in my opinion, year in and year out, the toughest weight class in any style of wrestling, any weight class, any style. 66 freestyle's right up there.
Sure.
But, like, those, it just, what those guys are capable of doing physically is just mind-boggling.
I agree.
Like, to pick somebody up who's, you know, planking and or circling or, you know, arching or twisting, all that movement that they're creating and all that center of gravity that they're shifting on their own body, which is shifting the guy who's lifting, and they're still able to pick somebody up. It's just crazy.
And you're seeing straight lifts
able to do
more and more and more because you're getting points for it, you know.
Yeah, side lift is the flavor of the month the last few years. So if I'm on my opponent's left side, I'll have both feet on the left side, and I'll have my right foot in you know, either in his hip joint or his rib cage. And then most of those lifts end up where the guy counters by going belly to belly with you.
Right.
And it's really hard to get a 4-pointer or a 5-pointer. It's hard to make the guy land in danger.
Right.
So that's when the guys walk towards the zone.
And then
if there's no bounds,
you get the one.
And if the guy doesn't have any, you know, distance covered, it's one for a step out. But if he, you know, if he could throw the guy from one place to the other, he gets a two for a correct throw.
That was okay.
Throw. And then if you could expose him, then you get your fours and maybe fives. So the Vlasov guy, the very first match when he's wrestling the defending champ, he put that kid right on his eyebrows.
Mm-hmm.
The guy never broke. That was the guy that Dake wrestled in the fall.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was a great match. And that was the deciding throw on it. He was awarded four. My opinion, he should only have been awarded two on that one. Because the kid never broke. And he landed right on his eyebrows and his nostrils were on the mat at the same time. Which, if you take a look at your face, your nostrils are facing down, your eyebrows are facing forward. It's both on the mat. Crazy. So, but watching that kid wrestle was impressive. And what impressed me the most about him was he worked harder on bottom than he did on top. And he was relentless on top. I mean, if the referee kept him down there for 40 seconds, he was trying to pick the guy up or was picking him up and throwing him the entire time. He didn't take one break on top. He never looked at the official. He never made a gesture to his opponent to open up on bottom or anything.
Right. He was just working.
He was just nonstop work. And when he was on bottom, he was working even harder.
Really?
Very, very impressed with
him. Well, so let's kind of pause it there. Do you think that as you know, and this is kind of going to lead into my next segue, I guess I'm segueing into my next question, rather. How do you think Lin, after, you know, a full real year on the job, how has he changed things? In your opinion, has it, you know, I guess to say better or worse is, you know, it's tough to say. But what I'd like to know is, where, in your opinion, does this country's Greco-Roman wrestling have to go in order to compete with the best, like to be up there? Look, we won a world title in 07, right? I mean, so we're not that far removed from that. How do we get to that point again, number one? And do you like what Lindland's doing there?
Yeah, I think just by virtue of making a change, it kind of inspires people.
Sure.
Even if you put in the wrong guy.
Right.
But I don't think we put in the wrong guy. I think we definitely put in the right guy.
I think so too.
And you know, he's enthusiastic and he's trying to, you know, start new programs, and he's, you know, looking to get the NWCA teams to go Greco instead of collegiate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's certain coaches on board with that at those schools.
Sure.
And hopefully maybe we'll get some Greco regional training centers and things like that. I don't know if he's trying to do the regional training centers or not.
But I don't know. I think a lot of those are going to lose a lot of their funding here soon. I don't know that that's the answer, whether it be freestyle, folkstyle, Greco, whatever. I just don't know that those are the answers. I think they need to be, to just dump, what are they giving them, $250,000 or $200,000 to house, feed, and, you know, athletes. I don't know. I don't know that that's the end all be all. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, what I'm saying is, if it's in a Greco context, what you're doing is you're just having a room for Division One, you know, college wrestlers to get some Greco workouts in.
Right.
You know, even if it's nothing more than just, you know,
a room. Right. Hey, we're going Greco today. Right.
You know, like whether you're funding it or not, you just throw that tag on there. And, you know, like, so at the Naval Academy, you have Nate Engel and you have Jay Antonelli there.
Mm-hmm.
So those kids are getting some Greco goes, and then you have a kid like Bryce Norris, who's a couple-time All-American, and now he's done with his NCAA career, and now he's wrestling Greco.
Mm.
You know, and you know, and then you had Lindsay Durlacher was doing that on that 07 team. Brad Vering was on that 07 team.
Mm.
You know, so then you have a kid like Ryan Mango, who finished his NCAA career, who's training Greco now. You know, I think one of Lindland's main goals I heard him mention was to get college wrestlers, when they're done with their college career, to go into Greco.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I understand he wants the grassroots kids,
mm-hmm.
you know, get the background. He wants to get kids. When I spoke to him, you know, he was talking about getting kids out to Colorado Springs, get the younger guys out to Colorado Springs to show their face and that type of thing. And
sure.
Start to, you know, get it. You know, I don't know. I have no idea what he's doing tactically, skill base wise, or technique wise. I don't know.
At a certain point, it almost becomes, again, like a moot point.
That's not even it. You know, that's not even yet. That's not even a factor of what his style is or anything like that.
It doesn't matter.
You know, you got your Minnesota guys,
mm-hmm.
you got your Army guys, and your Colorado Springs guys.
Right.
That everybody else is pretty much on the outside looking in.
Right.
Which isn't so good. You know, we used to have the Atwa guys up in Albany, and then you had the Sunkissed Kids, you know, had some Greco guys wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So you had it, you know, different pockets of the country that had really, really, you know, like...
A roots. Solid foundation. Right. A Greco...
You're either at Colorado Springs or you're in the Army, and you got a couple Marines and Air Force guys.
Right, but military base, right. Yeah, but what you see is, there's more guys with a Greco pedigree, or there were more guys with a Greco pedigree earlier in the 90s, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, in the 80s and the 90s, there were more groups of people training Greco in different areas of the country. So you had open guys training. You had the Marines were training in Quantico. The Army guys were training in Fort Benning, Georgia. And then you had, you know, the Atwa guys. You had your Minnesota guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had some guys. The the resident athlete program started, I think, in 91 or 92 at Colorado Springs.
Mm-hmm.
So before that, there was nobody living at the Olympic Training Center training Greco.
Right.
It was something you just did on your own. Then you got guys like Steve Frazier, who the year he won the Olympics, he won Vegas in freestyle and took second in Greco. And
Knows that, do they? No, no one even realizes that he won freestyle and didn't win Greco.
Right, and then I don't know if he chose to not wrestle in the freestyle Olympic trials or he chose to wrestle Greco. I don't remember 84. I was in ninth grade, so he may have wrestled both. I don't know, and made the Greco team. But I suspect Greco trials may have been first, and he planned on going to both, but he made the Greco team, and then that was it.
Said screw it, yeah.
He wasn't a full-time Greco guy.
No.
And a lot of people weren't back then, you know, straight through.
Well, okay, so I'm sorry, and I wanted to touch on this anyway. Mockoff wrestles and medals in two styles like it was nothing. Like it was nothing. And it seemed to me, I would classify, if I had to choose a style of wrestling, it would probably be freestyle. Only because everything that I did in Greco was set up by leg attacks anyway. But what I'm saying is, if you look at his tournament from the inside, from the top to the bottom, rather, he had a far tougher go in Greco. A far tougher go.
There's so much more parity in Greco's.
There really is. Like, it looks to me like the freestyle is very much filled with haves and have-nots. Or cans and cannots, I guess you'd call it. Because I guess everyone at a certain point at that level really is a solid wrestler. But, man, Greco was – by the way, I'm a huge fan of this kid, Smith, now. I love him. Robbie Smith impressed the hell out of me. Not even so much the way he wrestled, because that was cool too. To see him gunslinging for that front headlock on just about every go, that was cool to see. But I just love, and I think that this comes from Lindland too, I love to see these guys actually give interviews and sound like human beings. I mean, that was amazing, dude. He actually showed emotion. You know, you don't get the Iowa robot. You don't get the Metcalf brand's Gable fucking robot. Not that there's anything wrong with those guys. I'm sure they're swell human beings. But to see a person, like, number one, be genuinely patriotic, to the point where he was excited to hear the crowd, to be genuinely pissed off about the performance that is. And he was. He was pissed off that Mockoff couldn't stand at the end of the match. You know, or I guess maybe not pissed off, but he was genuinely proud of that. And there was a small moral victory. And to call his shots and say he's going to win the Olympics, it was cool, man. It was really, really – and he spoke like us. You know, he said he dropped a couple of S-bombs.
People are going to want to watch him wrestle because of it. You want to watch him wrestle because, like you said, he gets after it.
Mm-hmm.
But in the same context, now all of a sudden his personality makes you want – you're vested in him. You say, I got to see what this kid's going to do.
Yeah.
But using him as an example, my understanding is, he's a throwback from – an area of California that used to pump out Greco guys back, in the late 80s, early 90s through the 90s. And then you had a core group of people from Oregon, where Lindland's from,
right,
that were throwing out Greco guys. You know, you had those areas back then, and you don't have that anymore. Robbie Smith's one of those guys. Like, his coach, when he was in the youth program, was a guy that was coaching open guys too.
Oh, really?
So, that's my understanding of the situation.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. But so Mockoff wrestles and medals in two weight classes, two very, very strong 125 and 130 kilo weight classes. Like, those are not, like, you know, you're not talking about bum ass heavyweights. Like, not you're not talking about high school JV heavyweights, okay? That are just gonna do, you know, look like Rock'em Sock'em Robots in the center circle. Like, these are legit wrestlers. You're
talking about NFL linebacker
that can move
and mobility and, yeah, and athleticism.
Yeah, like Lopez. Do you think he dumped in the finals or no? Do you think Lopez dumped in the finals?
I don't know.
Look, man. When he lost to the Turk last time, it looked really bad. It looked like he was working this time. You know, I mean, don't forget, it was a different rule system as well.
Right. See, now here's my problem with anyone who does this. Like, Vlasov, and I tweeted this out with Vlasov, is that when he's on top, either he's saying to himself, I turn this guy or I die.
Right.
Like, you know, he's making it life or death, or when he's on top, it's fun for him.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to do something because of the enthusiasm of picking somebody up and putting them on their brain.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever his motivation is, and I have no idea whatever his motivation is, to him, when he gets on top, and I'm not saying he doesn't wrestle hard from neutral, but when he gets on top, it's everything to him. Like, he wrestles like it's everything to him. And some guys don't do that because they normally win even if they don't score every time they're on top.
Right.
So they take – so there's Lopez. Lopez gets one gut wrench, he gets his lead, and then he coasts.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of wrestling. You know, continuing. Like, so in other words, you know, ego or pride or just enthusiasm.
Right.
Or fear of losing or the, you know, the glory of success, whatever it is you're striving for. When you're on top in Greco, especially in Greco, freestyle to a lesser extent, it has to be everything.
Yeah.
And when guys take breaks once, you deserve to lose the most important match of your life because you took that break one time. Like, that's the way I feel about it.
Right.
And watch certain guys wrestle on top, they just have that attitude.
And when you train guys, is that what you try to instill in them?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm becoming now, it's funny, man. You know, I always liked neutral, I enjoy neutral wrestling quite a bit, and you know, I gravitated towards freestyle because I could wrestle on my feet more. But now, as I'm starting to train more senior level athletes, we have to score twice on top. We have to. We have to score twice on top. And as of right now, until Tyke's done with school, I only have freestyle athletes. Okay. If you score twice on top in freestyle, you win. You just do. Agreed?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so all I have to do is score. Every drill goes to two turns. Every single one. Especially when you don't want to. I'm trying to explain to these guys that, yes, it's nice to finish a sweep single and go straight into your lace. But how often does that really fucking happen? Like, you know, where you shelf it and you circle around and everything is crisp and perfect and pretty, and it just doesn't fucking work like that. So when you get on top, even in a drill session and you don't have a lock, you still gotta fight for two fucking turns. You don't get to choose now. You know, I'm a very kind of open-minded, you know, I'll take criticism from athletes and things like that. I have a give and a take with athletes, but that's the one thing that I have become absolutely stalwart on is we need two, not just one fucking turn, two turns on top at any given time. And that's all we need.
That was one of the things that I liked about the three period matches. I didn't like much about it, But I like the fact that there was that 6-point tech. And, you know, like, every takedown should result in a tech fall.
Yeah.
Every takedown should result in a tech fall. So, in that case, you'd have to turn the kid 3 times because you got 1 point for a takedown unless you put him in danger. And then, you know, whatever, you need 2 turns after that to get to 6.
Mm-hmm.
Or if the guy goes hand-to-hand, then you got to turn him for several. But the point is, you know, it's tough because kids... You know, they think, you know, they think they know. And in order to learn, you know, it's almost like an alcoholic. You have to hit rock bottom before you really, really want to do something about it.
Right.
So until a kid has that most heartbreaking, devastating loss, they're not going to learn.
Right.
And, you know, like you have kids, you'll have kids that you train that are really diligent. And,
sure.
And
they're for sure.
You tell them and stuff like that, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're buying into it.
No.
Being a good soldier and making that decision for yourself are two different things. Sometimes kids are just soldiers and they're going to do what you said, do what you say, but it doesn't mean that they're buying into it. And you know, like I believe that the sooner or later they're going to learn, and most of them, they'll learn long after they wrestle their last match. Most kids are going to
learn. It's unfortunate, isn't it? Yeah, that makes me sad, but you're right.
But it's fine. If that's what it takes. And the only time a kid's going to learn after their career is over is if they're still involved with wrestling. If they're still involved with wrestling and they learn that lesson, then they're going to try and teach that lesson to someone else.
And somebody will get it.
So what happens is, you know, some of the kids are going to buy into it before their career is over. And you know, if enough people pass that along, then more kids are going to buy into it before they, you know,
stop. And you see, yeah, and so, and you know, to bring it back to Lin, you can see an emphasis on parterre. You can absolutely see an emphasis.
Yeah, see, I don't know if I agree or disagree with you on that one. I think that, you know, our Greco guys are being coached by about 4 or 5 different people.
Sure.
And I don't know how eye to eye any of them, you know, are with each other. I'm an outsider looking in.
Right.
You know, would I love to be, you know, invited to come and shoot the shit with those guys and bounce ideas? I would love to. I'd be curious to find out how much merit some of the shit I'm doing,
you know, actually has, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, like we have kids that we're training that win bouts, you know, at the, you know, national level, you know, whether it's the UWW cadets or Fargo cadets or juniors. I mean, we got kids winning a bunch of matches out there. So how does that translate? If those kids were to stick with it as they get older, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know. If there's, like, I don't think there's a syllabus. I don't think there's a USA Wrestling, I'm the head coach, this is what I want you guys working on.
I agree with you. I completely agree with you. But
I don't even know if it should be or not. I don't know what's going on.
It seems.
I'm watching guys wrestling.
It seems to me that Zeke kind of broke that trend when he put it in the hands of individual coaches and things like that. And I think that Lin is following that suit. And it sounds like I'm being derogatory towards it, but I'm not. I believe that we're gaining on the Russians in that we are putting these guys in familiar positions and giving them an overview of what we'd like done, okay? And I think that Burnett is good at it. I think Zeke was incredible at it. I think Lin is starting to be a lot better at it. And like you said, there's really not – it's not like he has to reach very far. Most of those guys are either in the Springs, at Army – or in Minnesota. Like, so it's not like he has to have, you know, 17 different hands in 17 different pots. It's pretty easy to get a hold of these guys and their coaches and say, okay, well, this is an overview of how we want to kind of do things. And I don't think it's – I think there was an emphasis, at least to me, on straight and side lifts in this. I mean, and again, you know, a lot of it has to do with the scoring, right, and the way that they've kind of fiddled with the scoring a little bit in that the appreciation point is one and stuff like that. So but I do see it going in the fucking right direction for Greco, and that's really cool. Like it's cool because it was really disheartening after 07 to have 08 where, you know, Wheeler bronzed and that was about it, you know. And then, you know, you get guys that perennially on the team that maybe don't always, that don't ever place and things like that. So it's getting to be a little bit more fashionable, number one. And number two, it's getting a lot cooler to watch, you know?
Yes, absolutely. You know what I was thinking about too? The Northern Michigan program.
For sure.
You know, that getting phased out was a kick right in the balls to Greco, man. That was a disaster. That killed us.
That hurts.
Everything over there was going great.
Yeah.
And then bit by bit, it just kind of got, you know, picked away at. Now, I don't know how many of the kids that are attending now are on scholarships.
And I talked to Coach about it. They're saying 20 now. Like, they're saying they're going to get back up to 20 scholarships. And
they didn't have money for Tyler.
That was, yeah.
He wins, you know, whatever it was. He won juniors twice and cadets once or something like that. Yeah. And then I think a junior free. So, you know, so whatever. That was at its lowest. That was at Northern Michigan's right. point. Was about when he was finishing high school, whatever it was, 4 or 5 years ago.
Poor timing, yeah.
And, you know, now hopefully, because that was a major factor.
Yeah, that was a game changer for sure. And, you know, for those people that are listening that don't know, Northern Michigan University had what they called the USOEC, the United States Olympic Education Program. And so it kind of fostered, and they only wrestled Greco. So what people don't,
I think they had a women's team there too.
They did, right. They had a women's free that would go into Canada and wrestle, right? I mean, for the most part, they would just wrestle a lot of the Canadians.
They funded trips. They funded tours.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, but the men only wrestled Greco, correct?
Brought athletes in from overseas to come train.
Yeah. Yeah, so they were the last bastion of kind of, you know, cultivating Greco in this country, from what I understand.
D1 caliber wrestlers and brought them in and started training them Greco from, you know, day one in September after your senior year of high school. They were Greco guys. And then you have graduates from there, like Wheeler, like Mango, like Harry Lester. You know, and there were other guys, too. You know, those are the three that stand out.
Right.
You know, Wheeler winning an Olympic medal, and Justin Lester, Harry Lester, winning two world medals.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and we were sending Tyler Fraley there. He was signed, sealed, and delivered, and then they lost some funding, and they couldn't pay for him anymore. And you know, he wound up going to Clarion, and it just, you know, when he knew he had to wrestle folk style, I could see in his fuck. It's just not a passion of his. It just wasn't a passion. You know, he liked putting people on their dome piece. That's what he liked. You know, he liked getting underneath two on one. He liked, you know, getting to, you know, getting people in the air and launching them, man. That was fun for him. And he was good at it. He was really, really good at it.
Could definitely go, man.
Yeah, he's still got a little bit in him, for sure. And you know, yeah, we he and I have to have a couple conversations, but you know, that's here nor there. So you mentioned a little while ago 66K and, or excuse me, 65K in freestyle being probably the second best pound for pound weight in the world. I see that getting even tougher next year when they cut out 70K. Yeah, I mean most of those 70K guys kind of look at 74K and go, I don't know. It seems like a couple dog race, you know. I mean, between Burroughs and Gadaev, you know, is there anybody else that
Iranian's tough?
He's not that good.
Gave Burroughs pretty good go in the first bout.
Who did?
Guy from Poland.
Yeah, he gave him a good go. That just looks like Burroughs didn't warm up to me, though. It looked like a poor warm up to me. You know, I get all my guys on a regular basis about getting that first ugly match out of the way, and you know, I guess if you're good enough, you know, Jordan Burroughs is fucking good enough to have a poor match and still, you know, win.
It could also be, there's two ways to look at that, and I do not disagree with you, because sometimes, you know, you're just not ready to go when you're supposed to be ready to go.
Right.
I think what Burroughs specifically is, every time he has to wrestle somebody that already wrestled the match, he's in an advantage. So, like, he'll look better in his second bout, because the guy he's wrestling in the second bout already wrestled once, and that guy's not 100% anymore.
Right.
Now he's widening his gap. And every match into the tournament, he's as fresh as he was in the first go, and everybody else is beat up a little bit. And
what do you attribute that to? Just a style of wrestling, or?
I think a lot of it has to do with his style of wrestling. Like his ability to, you know, to freeze his opponent, either with his hands or his body fakes.
Oh, his level change. Just buckles, you know, knees.
So, you know, his opponents are jittery.
Right.
And so they're physically jittery, and they have to be mentally jittery as well.
Sure.
When he gets that movement going, it's, you know, it's almost like,
yeah,
you're playing catch up. You're just trying to catch up to your balance.
Yes.
And you don't even get a chance to wrestle.
No, so, I agree with you. I see him, like, the first minute of every match is just the timing of people's hands. Like, he's trying to find where that guy's going to put his hands and where, how fast he's going to put them there. And when he finds that timing, good luck. You're done, man. It's ball game over. I mean, you know, when he started to time Gadaev towards the end of the match, that took him a whole lot longer with him than it did anyone else. But man, when he started to, you can't give him space, you know. And I don't mean to write the book on, not that the Russians are fucking listening to this anyway, you know. But what I'm saying is, you know, but you can't give him any kind of space, man. You can't at all.
I can't wrap my head around, like I really, really believe that most of the other countries or coaches of other countries that are paying attention to us don't have context for what our guys can't do.
Yeah.
Like, in other words, if you lean on just about anybody from Europe or anybody from Asia, and even some South American guys, if you lean on them with an underhook off balance, they're going to headlock you or they're going to arm throw you. Like, I don't think that they have context that our guys aren't going to do that.
Can't, we don't even, it's not even in our repertoire.
That if they came double underhooks against Burroughs and they got out of position a little bit, that he's either going to salto him or headlock him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, so they're, like, I can't wrap my head around how people haven't pressed the action against him. And get into upper, like, Dake, the one match that Dake wrestled overtime match with him, he was just had his chest against him the entire time.
Yeah.
There's no other way.
Now, that said, though, I mean, that's easier said than done. I mean, because if he's, like, you see him kind of posting out and waiting, and it's so hard for to time his hands, right?
To get close to him is, I mean, that's not the easiest thing in the world to do either. I mean,
that's what I mean.
You take that step forward, and then he's in on you.
Right.
But in the same context, I don't see a lot of guys, you know, trying to bridge that gap and get inside of him. I just can't wrap my head around why they wouldn't try to formulate that type of a tactic.
I agree. Because
each one of those guys is capable of wrestling from in there.
Right, right.
You know, like you take, you know, that's why it would be so fun to see a Burroughs-Satyev match, because he's going to end up with an overhook.
Yeah.
From somewhere. Even after Burroughs got in on a shot, he's going to end up in an overhook. So now what happens from there? And Adam Satyev was even more upper body minded.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And the older one. So
yeah,
it's a weird dynamic. I really believe that they just assume that our guys have that.
We don't. Not many of them.
You wrestle a 12th stringer in Germany and you make a mistake and he's going to headlock you. Mm. He may never get in your legs a day in his life, but if you're leaning, that headlock and that arm throw, every single one of those guys is proficient, because it's a way to win the match with one move, so you have to know it.
Right.
But that's not our style.
Well, there was the Indian guy at 70K? No, I don't even know. The Indian guy.
He was losing 8-2, I think, and he headlocked the guy.
Yeah, it was 10-4 or 8-2 or something like that.
Down by 8. It might have been 10-2.
Yeah, I think it was like 10-2.
I tweeted the video out.
Did you? And he just ripped his fucking head off. And it was gorgeous. It was like, you know, and that's what drives me fucking nuts about a lot of these sanctimonious, you know, youth coaches, is they're like, well, don't hit headlocks. Well, why not? Why not? That's a great technique. That's a really, really solid technique that if you do it well, you know, it's not, you know, I can't go out there every day and, you know, just try to rip headlocks off and that's it. But man, there's a lot of merit in that technique. There's a whole lot of it, you know, and ask Brent Metcalf if it's a valid technique, because he got dropped on his head a couple times in NCAA finals by Darren Caldwell, who ain't got much else but a headlock, but you know, he got some junk, you know. So oh, just 65K is super duper deep in freestyle, and it looks like it's getting deeper. Do you see anyone from our country meddling next year? Doesn't have to be Metcalf.
I understand. You know, there's talk of Green going down to 65.
Yeah, but you still, you know, that's interesting too, because you still have to fucking perform there, you know?
Of course.
So, do you see anybody?
I don't know.
If so, who in our country? Like, because I know you are a proponent of like a, okay, next, okay, next, okay, next. You know, if you're not getting it done at a world level, right, then you ain't getting it fucking done. You know? So, if in your mind anybody is going to medal at 65K in Rio, who from our country, who is it going to be?
I don't know.
I fucking love that I stumped you on this.
Well, it's not that you stumped me.
No, I know, but like
what
it.
What are our choices? I mean,
our choices are.
You have Metcalf, Oliver, Kellen Russell.
Uh-huh.
Maybe
Stieber, right? Because he's got a year to get better.
Metcalf, Kellen Russell, Jordan Oliver, James Green. You know, I think Green would have the best chance. I don't know. I don't know how big he is, but he's got a year. You know, he turns himself into a marathon runner, you know, or a 10K guy. He doesn't even have to be a marathon. If he turns himself into a 10K guy,
right,
he can get down there where he'll be fully functional and be able to compete.
He's not that far off, man. I saw him like 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago. He's not that far off. He doesn't pull a ton of weight. He really doesn't. To make 70K, I mean, you know, he doesn't pull a ton of weight.
Like, I think that, you know, out of all of them, I think Metcalf has everything to be our best chance.
Mm-hmm.
I think if Metcalf, and of course, this here's some dope who, you know, runs a, you know, shitty little club,
mm-hmm.
giving advice to, you know.
This is a highly educated person that's been around the sport for 3 decades. You know, so go ahead. Your opinion is validated in me.
I think if he spent more time trying to get his opponent off balance and less time trying to score, he'd score more.
Give me an example.
So, like, in other words, so he's gonna put his right hand on his opponent's left elbow,
mm-hmm.
underneath his opponent's left elbow, and he's gonna come in with his left hand for a lefty high crotch.
Mm-hmm.
And he can create all kinds of motion and angles and body fakes and you know, use his hands and pulling down on arms and wrists and heads and all that stuff to catch the guy, you know, stutter stepping a little bit. And then getting underneath that elbow and coming underneath, you know, right hand underneath the elbow,
mm-hmm.
and attacking, you know, to his opponent's left leg. And that's where he wants to go. So what I see is that he's trying to work for setups to attack.
Right.
I think he would benefit with the pace that he could put on.
Right.
To set up his setups. Like, he has to go back. I don't think he needs more offense. I think he needs less of an offensive mindset. And offense, in the context of offense, means scoring holds.
Right.
Eliminate his attempt at scoring holds and generate more energy towards off balancing his opponent. And I think that's where Burrows is so, you know, perfect.
Right.
You know? Whether he's trying to do it or not, his opponent is off balance as mentally as he is physically.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I think Metcalf with his physical, you know, attributes, conditioning, strength wise and explosiveness, if he would just spend, you know, more time just, you know, working him and keeping him off balance and getting him to step and getting him to move and changing that guy's direction, and then the takedowns will come.
Right.
And he's also, I think Metcalf's very, very solid on counter offense as well.
Sure.
So in the same context, as you're working to work for your setups, you're going to get guys that are, you know, taking lunge type
of, right, just diving. Right, right, right.
You know, it's an off balancing, you know, safety blanket. I'm leaning forward, I might as well go.
Right.
And right. And those guys, even the best guys in the world, you know, aren't immune to that.
Right.
But, you know, like, so compare how Brett Metcalf is wrestling now compared to a bunch of the other guys. I don't know if any of them medal. But I think that's the most important thing he should be doing. I mean, most wrestlers should be doing that anyway.
Right.
For him and his skill set.
Do you think you don't think though that he's too plotty? And I'm not saying he's slow.
Like he doesn't have, you know, he's not pretty.
No.
Fluid wise.
Right.
That's why I don't think he should be on the offense as much.
Right.
That's why I think he should be more setting up setups. You know, everything he's doing should be, you know, like, just to get in a little bit better position. I'm just advance in small increments. And then at some point his opponent's going to be more tired than him, and that's when he's going to go. So what happens is when he's taking offensive attempts, I think he's wearing himself out as much as his opponent.
Right.
Now, he's still going to be less worn out, but it's not a big enough gap to – you know, that the gap in athleticism, like you're saying, if you say plotty, you know, the gap in athleticism could be circumvented by conditioning.
Right.
But if you're getting as tight as your opponent, you're not widening that gap.
Right.
That's just the way I, you know.
It's interesting. No, it's interesting. I mean, you look at, because Green.
I don't know what the fuck they're talking about, so.
Well, no, I mean, no. I mean, look, I see exactly what you mean, because James Green is basically a smaller, a little bit less powerful version of Brian Burroughs. Snyder. What's that?
I said of Brian Snyder.
Yes. Yes, exactly. But no, of Burroughs, and he's getting people to bite.
And he's not all athleticism. I mean, Burroughs is not all athleticism.
No. But what I no, there's a ton of things that Burroughs is doing right. But what I'm saying is Green is doing a lot of those things right too, with just a little bit less explosiveness to me. Like he's not trucking through every double. Where I can see Burroughs landing a shoulder and just trucking.
I think the major difference is where Burroughs puts his hands and where Green puts his hands when he's in on a leg is making more of a difference than their athleticism.
Could be.
When you're in the right spot, the guy can't react to you as quickly, which makes you faster. Right. If you're already fast to begin with, as Burroughs is, now all of a sudden, you know, it's a freak show.
Right.
God, the hell could he do that well? Because he's doing it that well. He's so proficient in having everything in the right spot, especially his hands and wherever he's making contact with. Sometimes it's his, you know, eyebrows. Sometimes it's his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Sometimes.
Yeah, he's creating a perfect triangle on their body. Yeah, for sure. No, I agree with you. And that is starting to lead to a lace in some instances too, which is nice to see him starting to turn people on top a little bit.
See, that's another example of how he's progressing. You know, and even if you watch John Smith over his 6 years of winning world championships, you know, in 87, I think, in 88, when he won his first Worlds and his first Olympics. I don't know how many sets.
That's Mama Rhino. Hello. Sorry, go ahead.
How many sets of backs he got. But I know that in 90, 91, and 92, he was turning everybody.
With that lace. With that cartwheel lace.
With a single wrist, with a one-on-one ride, he was turning people.
Yeah.
And he was turning guys with gut wrenches.
Yeah. I don't remember him turning anybody with a gut ever.
Oh, watch the videos. Let me tell you, he let his opponent decide how he was going to score.
Really?
He'd almost every time, if he wasn't finishing down on the legs, if he came up to the guy's upper body after a takedown, he was underneath the armpits and trying to win a wrist. And then a lot of times the guy would clear his wrist, and then he'd be able to get his lock. And then a lot of times he'd go to his lock, and then the guy would he'd go back down to a lace, and then the guy would bring his knees up, and then he'd come back to his gut or go to a wrist.
Mm-hmm.
He'd get a wrist in folk style. That's how he scored on top.
For sure, for sure.
First on back, and just murder people.
Yeah. No, I look, you're right.
And that's where Burroughs is right now. You know, like everybody – it's not just improvements. Not just for bad wrestlers.
No.
Anybody can have the same volume of improvement. I don't care how good you are. You can still have the same volume improvement over a set given amount of time. And that's what Burroughs is doing. He's simply getting better. He's evolving, and it's fantastic. I mean, you know, you see a dopey kid who wins a districts and acts like he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
You know, and this kid's won four. And has a bronze medal, and he's like, oh, I can fix this.
And he has. That's the interesting thing to me, is that he is, right, he's evolving. To me, you say evolving, I say he's kind of just heading to this all, because, you know, people do have the misconception that he's all athleticism. You know, I would.
What happens when you combine athleticism with great positioning and great tactics? That's what he is. And they got names for people like that. They're called multiple world champs.
Mm-hmm.
The guys who do it once or twice and then shut it down, like, I'm not saying they're not fantastic wrestlers, but you can't mention those guys' names in the same breath as Burroughs, as Smith, as Baumgartner, as Bela Glazov, as Teddy Shavili, as, Satyev, or any of those guys. They're not, you can't mention those guys in the same breath. It doesn't count. Because if you don't do it for more than 2 years, again, it's a great accomplishment, but the guys that only have two titles, I'd rather see a guy have two titles and then fall short for the next 4 years than a guy have two titles and retire. You can't mention those guys in the same breath. They're different animals. The guy that stops wrestling for a specific reason. And among those reasons is they're not going to get it done next time. But the guy who goes for next time, that's the special guy.
So he wants to be the best ever. Like, he's made it very clear.
Exactly. So, you know, like, and to not do it means you don't think you're going to do it.
Mm-hmm. To not get better.
The guys that shut it down.
No, I understand, but shutting it down is just a concession that you are not enough. Going to. Yeah, and you're not going to actively try and get better. You know? Because a lot of these guys have it in them to improve even after two.
Yep.
But I think it's more of a concession in that. Not just that I can't do it, that I don't want to put in the work to do it.
Right, exactly.
You know? Because he could have absolutely shut it the fuck down after last year. And, you know,
Or after the broken ankle title.
Right, right.
When he had nothing but championships.
Right. And he could have. But he really wants to be the GOAT. He wants to be the greatest of all time. And you can tell, like, that's not, like, see, that's the cool thing about, and that's why I think he's really become this transcendent figure in our sport, is not so much that, because, you know, Dave was the lovable guy, like, Dave Schultz seemed to be the lovable badass, right, the guy that would hug you before the match and then choke you unconscious during. You know, John was the cowboy. This guy really has made no bones about wanting to be the greatest of all time. And I think that that's a fucking cool thing that we don't really get, we haven't seen in a while. I'm not saying we've never seen it, because I think John made it pretty clear too. But man, I think it's really interesting to see this kid from Jersey that you and I both saw growing up, that he was okay. He was above average in high school. He could wrestle, you know, a little bit.
One of the kids when I was coaching a high school team medaled at the same weight with him. So I've got, you know, show the kids, see that guy right there? Guys, see that little kid right there? He used to be 125-pounder. Now he's a 4-time world champ at 160-something pounds.
Yeah, but, you know, he's, the way that he's jumped levels is so fucking impressive to me, you know, it's so impressive. I can't wait to see, you know, and if he does win out, right, so next year, 16, 17, 6, you know, 6 golds. He's got to be up there. He's got to be fucking up there, man, as one of the best.
Now, there's in a freestyle, you got this Teddy Shavili guy, Kadartsev, Medvedev, Belglazov.
How many did Belglazov have? How many, not Anatolia, Sergey have?
I think Sergey has 7, I think, because I know to boycott in 84.
Right.
He might have been like 79 to 88 without 84.
Right.
And he went up a weight 1 year because his brother, I read this, I think Randy Lewis posted on the mat.com that his brother Anatoly is the only person to ever win world championships in 3 different weights. I think he won it at 105.5, 114.5, and 125.5.
Interesting.
Now, Sergey's weight was 25.5 in 1 year. I guess Anatoly couldn't make 14 anymore. So Sergey went up to 36 and won, and Anatoly won at 25.
Unbelievable.
Heck, just somebody else's information.
Interesting. That's awesome. Yeah, he was a bad dude. He's Anatoly's coaching with Uzbeki now, right?
I have no idea.
I know for a while Sergey was coaching like fucking Thailand women or some shit.
Wow, he was at Lehigh.
Yeah.
Just a coach at Lehigh when I was in college.
Yeah, when you were in college, I was in high school, and I remember going to those camps. I pulled the fucking age card. What, bitch? I got a little bit more hair. Not much, but a little bit more hair.
Yet.
Maybe not. But I do remember going to those camps, though.
You were a freshman in high school. My first year coach.
Yeah, sure. You say so. God, you got a fucking steel trap. All right. Let's move along here, sir. I'm so happy that you decided to come back on with me, and maybe we'll do this in a week or two once you've kind of sifted through those matches again.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Thank.
Always a pleasure.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Sure. See ya.